I'm Umbreen Khan, and this is Inspired by Interfaith Voices. Each week, we explore how faith and beliefs shape our world. Quaker precepts hold that everyone is capable of experiencing the divine nature of the universe, and that this divine nature resides in all people. Because of that core belief, Quakers strive for peace, not simply nonviolence in their day-to-day lives, but that they work for peace for all through community action. The American Friends Service Committee is a Quaker-run organization that, quote, works for a just, peaceful, and sustainable world free of violence, inequality, and oppression. They work throughout the world to promote these values. The American Friends Service Committee began their work in Gaza in 1948, and they continue their work today. I spoke with Mike Merriman-Lotz, the American Friends Service Committee's Just Peace Global Director, about the humanitarian crisis that is unfolding in Gaza as a result of Israeli military retaliation after October 7th. Mike, thank you for joining me on Inspired by Interfaith Voices. It's a pleasure to talk with you this morning. I want to just jump right in. I understand that the American Friends Service Committee has issued a call in response to the ongoing violence that we are seeing over the last 6 months in the Middle East.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with you. This is actually the second joint Quaker statement that we and other global Quaker bodies have issued in response to the ongoing conflict in Gaza. We issued a statement early on after the outbreak of conflict, but felt it necessary to make a new statement at this time because of the scale and the immense humanitarian suffering that we're seeing on the ground, the level of killing, and at this moment, the spread of famine in Gaza, feeling that it was necessary as a community both to speak out and to call for peace, but also to speak to the need for change to some of the governments and to Quaker communities about the ways in which they might take action to end the ongoing conflict and to bring change.
As I was reading your statement, there's no reference to religion. It is focused on humanitarian concern. Does the organization speak to the religious dynamics that are underpinning this conflict or that are a part of the conflict? Or do you not touch those very difficult and sometimes polarizing topics?
We engage in that conversation about Christian Zionism and about the role of religion in perpetuating this conflict. But at its core, we don't see this conflict as one that's about religion, but rather a conflict that is about inequality and oppression and the different treatments of people in Israel and Palestine based on ethnicity. And so our focus in the statement is primarily on the realities of life as people are experiencing them on the ground, but in other situations, we may engage the religious dynamics.
Engaging on the religious dynamics, what does that look like?
At a religious level, really means working together with other faith communities and churches to speak to the need for churches to engage as peace builders and do education and outreach with faith communities about the importance of supporting our Jewish, Christian, and Muslim brothers and sisters in Israel and Palestine and not supporting theologies or doctrines that perpetuate conflict and inequality.
The American Friends Service Committee has had a longstanding involvement in this region. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the roots of the Quakers in present-day Israel and Palestine?
Quakers themselves have a history going back into the 1800s in Israel and Palestine. There's a Palestinian Quaker community, and Quaker schools and other connections to the area. AFSC's history in Israel and Palestine goes back to 1948, when the United Nations asked AFSC to set up the refugee camp system in Gaza in response to the war at that time, between 1948 and 1950, when we turned over responsibility for the camps to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency when it was initially established. But while we ended our work in the camps at that time, we continued with a presence in Israel and Palestine that's been maintained until today. And so we have offices now in Gaza, Jerusalem, and Ramallah, and work with both Israeli and Palestinian partners who are working to achieve peace as well as providing humanitarian assistance. Our staff in Gaza are continuing to provide humanitarian assistance in the communities where they're located, working in response to the conflict. But unfortunately, what they're able to provide is not nearly enough.
In the statement that was released by your organization, you write that AFSC staff in Gaza have shared horrendous accounts of starvation used as a tool of war. Children in Gaza are starving to death. The World Health Organization predicts that up to 80,000 more lives will be lost to disease and starvation if no immediate action is taken. You're not mincing your words in this statement.
No, we're not. You know, AFSC has a presence in many conflicts around the world. We currently have staff in South Sudan in response to the conflict and unfolding possible genocide in that location. We have staff in Myanmar. We've worked in many, many conflict situations, but we've never seen in recent memory a situation as dire as the one that we're seeing in Gaza now. The ongoing starvation of the population in northern Gaza, in particular, where on average people have access to approximately 250 calories a day, is unprecedented and horrific. It's a situation that's completely man-made. We've been trying to get goods in, but have been blocked because of the restrictions placed by the Israeli military. Our staff in Gaza are able to provide some limited assistance to people in displacement centers, but have very limited access because of the safety concerns that they face and the insecurity and the failure of the Israeli military to put in place deconfliction processes that guarantee the protection of humanitarian actors in the region. So, you know, the starvation that we see is unnecessary, and to see it continue without action by the Israelis, without action by the international community to stop people's starvation, is utterly horrific.
You know, you're using those words about starvation and the horrors that are being witnessed on the ground. There are no Western journalists currently on the ground in Gaza, as I'm sure you're well aware. And so many international media outlets are actually turning to relief workers. Have your staff been engaged in trying to document the consequences of using food as a weapon of war?
That's not something they themselves have been documenting. I think that what they've been documenting is just the difficulties of their own experience of trying to deliver assistance in a situation where there's no protection for them. I think it's important to note that the AFSC office was bombed within the first week of the conflict, and that all of our staff have been displaced on multiple occasions, 5 to 10 times, moving from place to place, that all of them are living in displacement centers. And that they have themselves lost multiple family members and friends. You know, our program director there has lost over 30 members of his family. Another staff member lost 40 members of his family in a single bombing. And at risk of their own safety, they're able to, you know, themselves kind of speak about the challenges that they face in locating goods and food that they can distribute to others, the increased costs to purchase food for distribution, the challenge of giving food, and the inadequacy of the aid that we're able to provide, given the scale of the need in Gaza.
You referenced briefly something being bombed, which has led to relocation. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You know, over the course of this conflict, at least 75% of all buildings in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed. That includes, schools and hospitals, universities, religious institutions and private homes. There isn't a single safe space that is present in Gaza. Over 90% of the population in Gaza have been displaced from their homes, and that includes humanitarian actors and those providing assistance to others. Humanitarian agencies are not safe. Doctors Without Borders locations have been bombed, as we saw just a week or so ago. The World Food Kitchen staff who were killed while out providing assistance. There is no safe place for anybody in Gaza. And a core part of that is the fact that the Israeli military has failed to put in place deconfliction processes.
Mike, when you talk about deconfliction processes, that's a lot of international aid jargon. What does that mean?
That means that in most situations of conflict, there is a channel that's open between humanitarian actors, hospitals, and others providing aid to a civilian population and the militaries involved in conflict to ensure that there are protected spaces that are not going to be bombed. And so humanitarian organizations share the locations of their offices, share the locations of field hospitals.
When you look at the events that have unfolded and the risk that humanitarian workers are taking, what do you think Americans sitting at home don't understand?
I think that one of the things that hasn't been clear to people is that the lack of protections, not only for humanitarian workers, but also for civilians in this conflict, is unprecedented. And I say that in the sense that more United Nations employees, more humanitarian actors, more journalists, more children have been killed over the last 6 months than in any other conflict in recent memory. The number of children killed over the last 6 months is more than the total number of children killed in all other global conflicts combined over the previous 4 years. And so there's just been a lack of distinction in the use of force used by the Israeli military that has placed everyone at risk, humanitarian actors and all others.
You know, if we sit with those numbers for a moment, I want to just lift up that the Israeli Defense Forces and the Israeli government leaders believe Israel is being held to a different standard, and that the attacks that they are carrying out are based on their intelligence and their focus on Hamas. How does your organization respond?
There were reports out just a couple of weeks ago from Israeli sources about the artificial intelligence systems that have been used by the Israeli military to identify targets. And they had identified targets up to 30,000 people who they thought could be killed based on social media posts and phone calls and loose connections with limited human confirmation that those people were legitimate targets or that they were actually members of Hamas or other groups. And then when those people were identified, the military was waiting until they were in their homes to bomb and to kill them, along with all of their families. And it identified and said that even for a low-level person, at least 20 other deaths were justified in killing those individuals, that anybody who was a high-level person, 200 to 300 other deaths were justified in going after those individuals.
This conflict has increasingly become a source of conflict among those who see themselves as bridge builders and peacemakers. What has the response been from the Quaker community to your call for action?
I think that there's been, across the globe, a growing grassroots push for change in policy by governments to recognize that there's a need for a ceasefire and a need for a change that protects all people, both Israelis and Palestinians. We've seen Palestine-Israel networks and members of Quaker meetings engaged regularly in contacting their elected officials, in organizing protests, in organizing discussion and conversation within their meetings about the need for change.
What is the mission of the American Friends Service Committee?
We are a peace and social justice organization. Our goal is to support efforts to build peace and to improve the lives of people, both in the U.S. and around the world. while working from a basis of Quaker faith principles.
Quakers are a relatively small faith community. How do you amplify your work?
This statement that just came out was a joint Quaker statement. And so in that sense, this was an attempt to work with the global community of Quakers to amplify our voice around the world on this issue. But similarly, we work with other Christian and interfaith partners to push for peace and social change, and regularly do joint advocacy within Washington, as well as outreach to faith community partners, as we all struggle for a different reality that will bring safety and security for Palestinians and Israelis in the long term.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing that and for your time this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike Merriman-Lott serves as the American Friends Service Committee Just Peace Global Policy Director. We will have links to the organization and some of the reports that were mentioned in this week's show notes. Coming up, a closer look at that news report that Mike mentioned, the one detailing how an expose discovered that the Israeli military is using advanced artificial intelligence in their retaliation campaign in Gaza. You're listening to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hi, friends. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of our community. I don't know if you know this, but we are on the air all the way from Richmond, Virginia to Ketchikan, Alaska, and in so many places in between. We're a national show, and we are a small and mighty team committed to bringing you stories and sounds from around the world that convey not only the diversity and the pluralism of our country, but the beliefs that are shaping our world, our politics, our culture, and the ideas that sustain us and inspire us to think about where we are going. And that brings me to this question. If you value us, if you enjoy listening and appreciate what you're hearing, I want to ask you to take a moment to consider becoming a sustaining member of Interfaith Voices or make a one-time donation at interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. That's interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. Thank you, and let's get back to the show.